Hello, Hooks fans, and welcome to episode 8 of the Hooks Baseball Podcast. I'm JD Davis. Michael Coffin is on assignment this week, but we have got a great show lined up for you today. We're going to have former Hook Alex Sogard. He's going to join Dan Reiner for a chat. Alex is now a coach at Wright State University, so it'll be great to catch up with him and see what he's been up to lately. At the end of the show, I'll be joined by Amy Johnson, and we have a conversation with our good friend, former coworker, Garrett Young. Garrett is the ballpark entertainment manager at Minute Maid Park with the Houston Astros, and he's going to share what his experience has been like moving from minor league baseball to the big leagues and what it's like to produce a World Series game. So we can't wait to... But to start off the show, I'm joined by two great friends from Visit Corpus Christi, Claudia Huerta and Meredith Darden. Claudia and Meredith, how are y'all doing today?
Great.
Well, thank y'all for taking some time out to talk to us. We're excited to talk about a new joint kind of project that we're working on for this week. But first, for those that don't know, you know, Visit Corpus Christi, what is it? What would a typical year look like, or y'all's specific jobs and roles with the organization? If we weren't in the middle of a pandemic right now, what are the kind of typical things that y'all provide here in Corpus Christi?
Well, first of all, thank you for having us, JD. It's been a dream of ours to be on a podcast, a true podcast. So you're making dreams come true today. Regular day in the life at Visit Corpus Christi, we would be inviting people to Corpus Christi, telling them to go out and touch things and not social distance and gather and all of the things that we can't tell people to do right now.
Yeah. So, I mean, if we weren't in the middle of a pandemic, we would be absolutely inviting people to stay in our hotels, visit our attractions, visit our beaches, and then everything in between. So we specifically work to advertise to people that do not live here to come visit Corpus Christi.
You know, a lot of people think tourism industry and think it's all for people outside of the Coastal Bend and outside of Corpus Christi. But one of the things that's important is that when we have those exciting things here in Corpus Christi for tourists to do, that also gives people local to Corpus Christi things to do, things to entertainment, or it's restaurants and things like that. And it's kind of like a rising tide lifts all boats. And if we can improve the tourism industry, we're going to improve our own lives every single day.
Absolutely. We just celebrated National Travel and Tourism Week last week. And in the course of that celebration, we talked to a lot of our partners about what tourism means to their business. And Richard Lomax at Water Street said it best. If we had no tourism, he would lose 50% of his business, but he would still have to employ 100% of his staff. So how would that business exist? For us as locals, we enjoy going to Whataburger Field and watching Friday night fireworks, but would we be able to support a stadium like Whataburger Field without the sales tax and the revenues generated by visitors coming to our community?
Absolutely. Let's go to a positive note here. What is it that you've seen during this time that's been inspiring from the local community? What are the things that bring a smile to your face or get you excited about living here in Corpus Christi?
We got to see a lot of things. It's actually, you're right. There have been a lot of inspiring things. I think one of them is we saw a need for the service industry, right? They were without jobs. And so Meredith and our other coworker, Emily, took on this virtual bartending experience. And so they started it, but we got to watch this service industry group take it on and live it themselves and make money in a different way. And so that was really interesting.
One of the things that I thought was really cool was how quickly the local breweries adapted to their situation.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Thankfully,
yeah.
Governor Abbott allowed alcohol to go or for delivery. And so our local brewers who have worked really hard to establish an industry here in the Coastal Bend had to teach their on a dime. And I think that they really represented the spirit of hospitality, travel, and tourism with their creativity and their ingenuity and their just true grit and hard work.
Absolutely. I think one thing too, I feel like y'all may have some insight on this. When I think of businesses and I think everybody's got to be competing with each other and I've got to win and you've got to lose, but What do you see when you look across specifically the tourism industry or the service industry and folks that you're working with? Do you feel like has this pulled them together and this is everybody kind of working together to make sure that we're all okay?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that you hit the nail on the head where when you said we are typically live in a world where we're competing and I have to win and you have to lose. And I think that you're right. Like that went away. We saw our attractions band together. And so we quickly went to this weird virtual digital world that nobody ever anticipated. We all knew, right, that this is the world we live in, but we never actually knew. And so watching some of our attractions, like the Texas State Aquarium, which we talked about, is one of those things that if tourism didn't exist, the aquarium would not exist in the way it exists today, right? And so watching them be able to keep their animals interacting with each other, with their trainers, and then broadcast it to the world and then allowing us to share. And the same thing with the hooks, right? We were able to watch you broadcast all of the things that you have to offer that's not just baseball, all of the extra stuff that you do as a stadium. And so watching some of those things and watching our attractions be able to support our community, right? Like there's still things to do, even if you're far. We were able to really see that and show that to the world. And so watching everybody do that was really kind of fun.
Yeah, I want to make a point here too, to just bring up the social media channels. And you all do such a great job. Visit CC Texas on Instagram and Twitter and visit Corpus Christi on Facebook. For the people that are locals that are wondering, you know, how do we kind of see this stuff? Going there is a huge, huge way, because now you get a window into what's happening at Whataburger Field, what's happening at the Lexington and the aquarium and the restaurants and different things like that, just kind of across the board. So definitely check that out if you aren't following those accounts already. So now how do people get involved? What can locals do to help businesses that are struggling or looking for that help?
We can go to whatever that means to you, right? But go to the businesses, whether it's a curbside food pickup or when the aquarium and the Lex and are able to open back up and Horses on the Beach and Rolling Tide Boiling Company and, all, you know, everybody able to open when they can, you know, as the governor tells us we can. But I think being present, whatever that looks like to you, I think that that's how we can help our community, you know, bit by bit.
Yeah, one of the things to touch on that I would add is what you brought up earlier, JD. Without tourism, our attractions wouldn't exist. But at this time that we can't have visitors coming in, we need locals to support our attractions and all of the things that support our tourism economy in Corpus Christi. You know, tourism is the second largest economic generator in Corpus Christi. And if we don't sustain our attractions, then how are we going to sustain that revenue source? So I think locals can donate to the different attractions. They can buy memberships. They can buy merchandise in retail stores. They can go dine in restaurants. Just get out there and, if you can, support your local economy.
Absolutely. So I want to talk about what y'all are doing now, what Visit Corpus Christi has started. Visit CC Cares. What is it? How did it start? And what's it all about?
Yeah, Visit CC Cares was developed out of necessity, right? We felt helpless as an organization. Our job is to bring people here and get them to go to all of our attractions and spend money. And we couldn't do that. It was literally against the governor's orders. So we started talking about how can we help? And we have, thankfully, a 501c3 charitable foundation in the Corpus Christi Heritage Society. And we decided that we were going to start a fund and a line of merchandise to raise funds to give financial assistance to people in this industry who literally could not go to work. They weren't allowed to go to work. They weren't allowed to make a living. And they were being told to stay at home, but you still have the bills to pay. You still have mouths to feed. And sometimes even more when your kids can't go to school and they're all at home going through your fridge. So we created this fund and developed a way for people to apply for assistance. And we've been able to give at least 11 payments out so far. It might be more as of this morning.
I think we can talk also about how we partnered with Made in Corpus Christi, who is a local brand. And so if you haven't been in her store or seen her website or her Instagram, I think you owe it to yourself to go take a look. But she's Nikki Riojas, who's the owner and founder of Made in Corpus Christi, is a creative genius, if you will. And so she partnered with us to make a custom line of merchandise specifically for us to sell and for her to sell. And then she's willingly donating 50% of her profits to the Visit CC Cares program. So in addition to private donations, which we're extra grateful for, but Nikki is doing a lot of the hard work for us. She's producing the merchandise. We worked with an in-house designer and a local designer to produce this merchandise. And it's all on her website and it'll live there for as long as there's a need. And her stuff is really great quality. And we're excited to be able to partner with her and sell that line of merchandise to help those people that we know cannot work, that work in the travel and tourism industry specifically. So we're excited about it. She's a really great partner.
The cool thing too about the line of merchandise at Made in Corpus Christi is we're not only generating funds for Visit CC Cares, but we are paying a local business to create merchandise, who's paying a local screen printer to print the merchandise, who's then employing people to come in and do the screen printing. So really 98% of the funds from this line of merchandise stay right here in Corpus Christi and go to putting people back to work.
Absolutely. And I think that's just a bigger example of what Visit Corpus Christi is all about. So I'm going to jump in and talk a little about what we're partnering on. So starting today, we have a jersey auction that is up on our website. You can go cchooks.com. And we've got some really, really great jerseys that are for sale from past seasons, some of them from last year, some of them from several years ago. And the proceeds from this jersey auction are going to go to the Visit CC Cares Fund. So that way, Hooks fans can get involved and help out this industry that's kind of having a tough time and struggling through this. So we're really excited to partner with it. I want to highlight a couple of jerseys. Probably the biggest one, one I'm most excited about, is we have a George Springer game-worn Raspas jersey from last season. So Springer rehabbed with the Hooks in 2019. And the funny thing about when Springer was here, the games he played were all theme night games for us. So his first couple of games were Coastal Bend jerseys, and then he finished up with a Raspas jersey. He never wore a regular, quote, Hooks jersey. So we've got that George Springer Raspas jersey. We've got a Colin McHugh game-worn jersey as well. We've got Jose Urquidy, who was the Hooks opening day starter last year and ended up getting all the way up to the big leagues and then pitched in the World Series for the Astros. We've got about 20 jerseys. So check it out, cchooks.com. And those proceeds are going to go to the Visit CC Cares Fund, which we're really excited to partner with and hopefully help some folks out. So want to wrap up with, if people have questions about Visit CC Cares, where do they go to find out more information? Maybe they want to apply, or maybe they know somebody that should apply that's been affected by this. Where do they need to go, and how does that work?
Absolutely. Visit cccares.com. You can apply for financial assistance. You can make a direct donation, or you can shop for merchandise. It's really important to share the message that this money is available for those people in the travel and tourism industry who need it. So definitely check out visitccares.com for all the details.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Claudia. Thank you, Meredith. Thanks for joining us today. And again, check out cchooks.com for that jersey auction, and check out visitccares.com to learn more about getting involved. So thanks again to Claudia and Meredith, and let's send it to Dan.
Hi everyone, this is Dan Reiner, joined this week by Alex Sogard, a former Astros farmhand who spent nearly 5 seasons in the system and currently serves at the helm for the Wright State Raiders of the Horizon League. Alex, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, Dan, for having me. I appreciate it.
So I wasn't with the Hooks for your Hooks tenure, but my colleagues told me I had to bring up your bullpen entrance song, Church Clap by KB and Lecrae, which they maintain to this day is one of the best warm-up songs in Hooks history. So I'm curious to know what your connection is to that song and if it's still in your rotation today.
That's awesome to hear. You know, that song, I had a teammate, Ben Orloff, who was on the Hooks, who's now actually the head coach at UC Irvine in California. And me and Ben were very close. And, you know, he helped me in my faith journey and my walk with Christ. And, you know, that was along that time. And so I'm a big music guy. I've always loved music and started kind of looking into some Christian rap. And I found this song and I was like, man, this is great. And ended up being my walkout. And, you know, I still hear the song. It's funny. I have a 5-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 1-year-old, and I've played it for them a few times and they love it. They love it. And so, but every time I hear it, you know, I'm talking to my wife the other day about it. Every time I hear it, it brings me back to Corpus. Like I picture, you know, the field almost like running out from the bullpen, because, you know, the fans were great there and they'd always get into it and they'd start clapping. And so, you know, it was kind of, I guess I lucked out finding the song, but it was just something that ended up, you know, taking off.
That's awesome. You spent parts of 3 seasons with the Hooks, actually quite a good amount of time in Corpus from 2012 to 2014, 74 games, 4-2 record, a 3.32 ERA in 122 innings as a lefty reliever. That's, you know, that's obviously respectable work in the Texas League, which is, you know, a hitter's friendly league. So what, can you share some memories of Whataburger Field and your time in Corpus?
Yeah, I loved, you know, Corpus. My wife and I look back, you know, I was fortunate. She traveled with me. We got married like right when I started pro ball. And so she went with me everywhere we went. And Corpus was probably our favorite place, you know, and obviously we spent half of our time there, almost 3 seasons. But I just, you know, playing at the field, Whataburger Field was awesome. You know, you got the bridge in the background, you got the water park right there. I think that league in general, you know, it was such a good league. You know, the talent there was incredible in the few years, you know, I was there. But I think, you know, the Corpus, the Hooks in general, but just Corpus Christi, I think they invested in getting to know the people more than anywhere we've been, you know, from the workers to the fans to the community. It was like, you know, a lot of times as a pro player, and I know it's normal, but everyone loved and cared about you because of the player. And I felt like Corpus was different. They just loved you as a person. You know, they wanted to get to know you. And, you know, especially the workers there, it was like they were, you know, the coaching staff was Keith Bodie and Gary Ruby was my pitching coach, which he had his famous walkout. I don't know the name, but he was like Ruby, 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 you know, every mm-hmm. time he came to the mound, which we thought was funny. But no, the front office was awesome. They treated the players with respect. I loved everything about it. You know, there's nothing, but to me, when I look back at my career, there's nothing better than a night game in Corpus, you know, and it just, the crowd's into it. They're always packed. You know, I lived half of my games in the bullpen out there. And you know, it's a really cool bullpen by the kids section, you know, out in left center. So, really, really awesome experiences there. And, you know, I definitely want to go back one day. It'll be weird. It'll be weird watching in the stands, but you know, my wife and I have talked about, you know, one day we'd like to go back there just because we cherished our time there.
Right. Well, hey, I mean, there, you know, A&M Corpus Christi plays games. There's the Clayburgh Classic, which has a few different colleges. Maybe one day you'll find yourself in the dugout again, you know?
For sure. For sure.
So you grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, attended Thunderbird High School. Great name, by the way. I found that a lot of Phoenix area schools tend to have awesome names, and they usually have something to do with, like, cactus. It's either like cactus or mountain or something like that. But Thunderbird's a great name. But anyway, you had the privilege of playing baseball with your brother, who's 1 year your elder, and that's Correct. Big league infielder Eric Sogard. What was it like growing up with an athletically gifted brother who happened to play the same sport as you? You know, you're a lefty pitcher, he's a lefty batter. Did you have his number, or did he have you figured out? You know, how did it go in those backyard battles?
Yeah, we definitely had our number of battles. You know, like you said, we're only a year apart. We're 14 months apart. And so, you know, we did everything together. We've always been a sports family. It was just the two of us. And a lot of times I was hanging out with him, you know, so anytime he was playing sports with his friends, I would tag along. And I think that helped me along my journey, you know, athletically, because I was always the young guy. And my brother, he's gifted at everything, you know, which can frustrate you. But at the same time, I think it helps me, you know, and we just like to compete. We like to compete. We had a ping pong table at our house. that we would get into some intense battles. You know, we played growing up instead of playing T-ball, we played wiffle ball in our backyard. We like had a league where we went straight to coach pitch from our wiffle ball games. And that was just what we did. You know, we played almost every day. And then as we got older, you know, we were on the same little team, you know, obviously the same high school team. And, you know, I actually never got to face him in a game. That was always what, you know, we would talk trash on who would get who out. but we would, you know, in practice, I would throw to him and stuff. And, but in a real competition, we never played each other, which is funny because he went to Arizona State out of high school. I went to Oregon State. And so we just never crossed, you know, we'd play each other, but then I wouldn't face him, personally.
Right. Yeah. That would have been awesome to see that happen. Eric is entering his 10th big league season this year, and he's back with the Milwaukee Brewers. Has he been able to give you any insight or perspective on where things might be headed for MLB?
Yeah, I've been asked that a few times. It's funny. You know, you would think he'd have some insider information, but it seems like not a lot of people know what's going on. You know, I've talked to a number of scouts and scouting directors just from a draft perspective, you know, with our college guys. And before they made that decision, you know, they most recently said it's going to be a 5-round draft. But before that, they were talking about possibly 10 rounds. And there were a lot of unknowns. No one seemed to have answers. He said, you know, we were joking, you know, would the season start before or after 4th of July? And he bet on before. He was like, I think it'll start right at the beginning of July. And this was, I don't know, 3 weeks ago. And so, you know, it seems like there's been some of that talk, but nobody really knows. It just depends if they can come to an agreement. But I think everybody's hoping that baseball can come back, you know, sooner than later.
Yeah, I would say so. So one more question about Eric before moving on, because I don't want to dwell too much on your brother, but all right. So all right. I need an honest answer here. Do you believe MLB rigged the vote for face of MLB in 2014, stealing the win from your brother and giving it to David Wright?
I honest answer, I'm gonna say yes, 100%. I don't know. I mean, I will say this. I learned after that, you know, I don't know what it was, a month span when they did that face of the MLB. The Oakland fan base is incredible. I mean, I tell you what, my brother and his wife always talked about how much they loved it out there, but now I know why. I mean, they rallied the troops and you know, he's clearly not. You know, when you think about the face of MLB, he's not the guy you're thinking of, but it's just funny, you know, the round after round, I remember he beat like Clayton Kershaw and all these big name guys, you know? And so I thought he had it. I forget when it ended, but I remember before I went to bed, he was way ahead. It seemed like way ahead. And then the next morning, all of a sudden I saw he lost and I was like, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I read some of the controversy there. Who knows? Who knows?
It's still,
you know, what happened there.
A's fans are still mad about it to this day. I'm sure our broadcaster Dominic Catronio is an A's fan at heart, and I'm sure he, you know, it would still get him riled up if you asked him about it.
Yeah.
You know, I think he had like a 10-point lead going into midnight, and it ended sometime in the morning, and David Wright somehow pulled out the win. So I think it's just more that you know, East Coast media bias. They didn't want the guy with the glasses on.
Yeah. Well, it's probably not a good look. You know, you don't want a guy with glasses.
I think he had 6 career home runs at the time. It was all fun and games. You know, it didn't really mean much. But to see your brother, I you know, in the finals of that, I that was
no,
pretty
it was
cool.
Funny. It was funny. Like, you know, at first I wasn't even really voting. On like the first round or two, you know, I was just like, I'm not gonna.
Does he know
all
that?
The retweets and stuff? And then I don't know if we've ever talked about that, but then, you know, he's all of a sudden he's in, you know, whatever it is, Elite Eight, and all. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna get on board and you know, tried to retweet and do the whole deal. vote every day, and it was a funny little thing that went on. But yeah, I don't know. I would like to know, you know, if they rigged it or not. I mean, we'll probably never know.
No, probably not. But it, you know, in our heart of hearts, we can know that he deserved the win for that.
Yeah, for sure.
So you retire in 2016, early 2016, and you almost immediately jump into coaching where you're at now at Wright State in Dayton, Ohio, first as an assistant, and then you're promoted to head coach before the 2019 season. At what point did you know coaching was in the cards for you, and how did a guy raised in Arizona who graduated from NC State end up in Ohio?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've bounced around, you know, since high school. I feel like I've been all over the map. So I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, like you said. I went to Oregon State out of high school, and very fortunate to play there for 2 years. It was actually when they won the national championship back-to-back years. So I was part of those teams. Like most college players, my goal was to try and play professionally. And so I ended up, you know, I clearly wasn't good enough for Oregon State and didn't pitch a whole lot. So I ended up transferring to NC State. So ended up going pretty much across country. Had never been there before. You know, I just kind of took a chance. My pitching coach, Tom Holliday, is the one who recruited me. He was Matt Holliday's dad. And so, you know, I put a lot of faith in him and went to NC State, played pro ball for those years. And then, you know, in the off season, my wife's from Hickory, North Carolina. I met her when I was at NC State, and that's where that was kind of our home base in the off season. We lived in North Carolina. And, you know, I think I always wanted to get into coaching. You know, when I was a player in college, it was always something I thought I would like to do. I was fortunate to play for some really good coaches, Pat Casey at Oregon State, Elliot Avent, who's still at NC State, and Tom Holliday, and then a number of really good coaches in pro ball. And so I knew that would one day be in the cards. I wasn't sure if it was going to be in pro ball or in college. It was really just wherever the opportunity came up. And so right when I got released, I was working to, you know, at the time I had two little ones. And so I was trying to make some money just working at a factory. And I just started sending out emails to every coach. I started Division I for no reason. I was just like, I'm going to start the highest level and I'm going to email every single coach. And so that's what I did. And it took, you know, a lot of people don't know, there's roughly 300 Division I schools. I emailed every head coach and then the two assistants in separate emails. So it took a few weeks. I probably sent close to almost 900 emails. And I basically, my reason was just to get my resume out and say, here's my story. Here's what I'm looking to do to get into coaching. And I really didn't have any restrictions on where, you know, or regionally. I was willing to go anywhere. My wife's, she's as supportive as anyone. And she's like, yeah, we can pick up and go anywhere. You know, we just spent 6 years in pro ball. So we're as good at picking up and moving as anyone, you know. And so I emailed, Wright State was one of the guys who got back to me, the recruiting guy, Jeff Mercer. And he's like, hey, I haven't heard of anything, but if I do, I'll let you know. Well, a few weeks later, I followed up and he's same thing. Said, yeah, I still haven't heard anything, but if I do, I'll let you know. Well, then the next day, Greg Lovelady, who was the head coach here, went down to Central Florida, University UCF. And Coach Mercer became the head coach. And then he reached out. He said, hey, are you still looking? And I said, yeah. And then we just kind of hit it off over the phone. He was looking for a pitching guy that had some pro experience. And I think, you know, I think I lucked out. It was the right place, right time type of thing. You know, I'll be completely honest. I was willing to start anywhere and, you know, be a volunteer, which is a lot of times how you start and work your way up to mm-hmm. a paid job. And I just kind of lucked out, you know, and then he hired me in July. So,
right. Then Coach Mercer leaves before the 2019 season. Did you have any idea that you'd be asked to be his successor?
No, I really didn't. That was a crazy time. you know, the stuff happens so fast during the, you know, the coaching carousel, they call it in college. You know, when it's all going, you hear rumors, and I talked to Jeff, you know, as he was going through the interview process, and you don't know if we may go to Indiana with them, or if we stay here, or if we're totally out of a job. You know, it just happens so quick. And I didn't think me becoming the head coach was an option. You know, I just, being so young into coaching, you know, you just assume that they're going to go with someone with more experience or whatnot. And, you know, obviously when Bob Grant, the AD, you know, talked to me, I was very excited for the opportunity. But again, I think I lucked out in that standpoint as well. You know, it was a timing thing, and very fortunate for the opportunity, and I've really enjoyed, you know, this was going to be our fourth season here, and have really enjoyed it, really enjoyed the program, the players especially. So it's been a lot of fun.
Looking at the Horizon League, it's Wright State, Youngstown State, Illinois, Chicago, Milwaukee, Northern Kentucky, and Oakland University in Michigan, which is actually quite further north than Detroit. None of those exactly scream baseball weather, especially on the college timeline. Yeah. So what is playing in a small, you could call it mid-major conference in the Midwest, present to you when it comes to recruiting and scheduling and actually playing baseball?
Yeah, there are definitely some challenges. Really unlike any I've personally been a part of before I got here. You know, growing up in Arizona, then going to Oregon State, then going to NC State in the South. I'd never been in the, you know, played in the Midwest, even much in pro ball. It's different. It's a lot harder, you know, with the weather. But I think, you know, I don't know if you can find truth behind it, but I think the type of players we get and the people up here can be tougher in a sense. And maybe because, you know, you're not handed 70 and sunny every day, you know, you kind of have to grind with what you got. But it makes it a lot harder, you know, I believe you have to have a turf field to survive up here, which we're fortunate to have. As far as a recruiting standpoint, you know, we like to get a lot of Midwest kids, a lot of Ohio kids, Illinois, Indiana. We have a lot of success in our region. You know, I think if we go out west, it's going to be a lot harder to bring a Cali kid, you know, to Ohio. And we're aware of that. So we stay in our region pretty much. And we like, you know, scheduling wise, we like to play a tough schedule. So I do like to challenge our guys for a number of reasons, but we'll play SEC, ACC teams the first 3-4 weekends right off the bat and you know, see how good we are really quick. But it's good experience for them. You know, they love going to those environments. You get 10,000-15,000 fans screaming at you. Mm-hmm. You know, you get, it's a little bit of that pro ball experience.
Right. I mean, you look at even the 2020 schedule that you guys had already played before the season was canceled. You start the season at number 6 Mississippi State, swept there, but then you immediately go to number 1 Louisville and hand them a 10-3 loss. Then you were at number 20 Auburn, at number 11 Tennessee. So, I mean, obviously you are challenging your guys. And what kind of, I guess, is there a toll that it takes on, you know, all the travel and being away from home, just because you probably can't even play at your home facility until what, probably March when the weather starts warming up?
Yeah, no, you're right. Usually it's the fourth weekend, which is like mid-March, is usually you can play at home, but you're flipping a coin with the weather, you know? So for example, this season, it was going to be our fifth weekend, which was March 13th to 15th, I think, was our first home weekend series. So we've been playing for a month before we're at home. And then unfortunately that's right around the time the season got canceled the day before that. But yeah, so we're playing a lot more home, road games early. And I think for these kids, again, we got a lot of Midwest kids. That's normal. You know, when I first got here, I was like, man, seems like all we do is play on the road, but that's just part of baseball in the Midwest or baseball in the North. I don't think it takes a toll necessarily on the guys. You know, they love traveling. Heck, you know, they get to miss a few days of class, which they're not going to complain about. But I think, you know, you get to see different cities, you get to see different facilities, and you get to meet different people. You know, I think it's good experience for them as well.
Right. So we're recording this on Monday, and you already brought this up in passing, but reports came out last week that MLB is looking at holding a 5-round draft this year opposed to the regular 40 rounds. And you yourself are a former 2-time 26th round draft pick in 08 and in 2010 by the Astros. And having the experience of your own players get drafted now, what impact do you see this having on collegiate players hoping to make a run at the pros?
It's going to have a tremendous impact. You know, it's, I think it's unfortunate for a lot of guys. You look at this draft specifically, I think I saw somewhere it's over 1,000 players who would have gotten a chance to get drafted who will no longer get drafted. And, you know, I guess, yeah, you could say I'm a perfect example of that. I didn't make the big leagues, but, you know, had a great experience in pro ball, got to meet a lot of great people. You know, we wouldn't be having this interview right now if it wasn't for my opportunity. So, you know, it stinks. It does. I hate it for our guys. But it's just kind of, it's a hard time we're in right now, but yeah, it's gonna, there's some major effects. You look at only 5 rounds, and then free agents will only sign for 20,000, which compared to a normal draft, you know, six to 10 rounds, you're signing for a lot more money than that. So I think when you look at college baseball, you know, Division I especially, it's going to be loaded with talent because you're going to get the high school kids who are probably going to get drafted, you know, in the 6th to 20th round that may sign. Now they're going to college. And then you're going to get the college juniors and seniors who, you know, we're going to go. Like, mm-hmm. We had a kid this year who had a chance to go top 10 rounds. You know, he may still go, but I don't know. And now those kids are coming back because they're not going to sign for 20,000, you know, that because that's not – they're selling themselves short. So I think college baseball may be the best it's ever been. But it also creates a big roster crunch, you know, at our level. So you're going to see a lot of junior college programs benefit from it. You know, they're going to be – guys will go there for a year to get a better chance to play, but also to be able to get drafted from that. So it'll be interesting. I know the NCAA is still making decisions as far as possible roster limits and increasing scholarships and a number of things. So it's kind of like – We're hurry up and wait a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm. We're trying to find solutions, but then we have to wait to get some answers first.
Have you had any of your guys come to you for advice? Any of your, you know, juniors or seniors who, you know, are on that the cusp of that, you know, 5 to 10 round range? I know you had a couple of top 5 round picks in the last couple of years. So have any of those guys, you know, as a former pro, you know, you have some insight to give them. Have they come to you at all for help?
Yeah. I've talked to a few guys, and I try to, I guess that's the one benefit of my journey is, you know, I came from a place where our guys are trying to go, you know, to play in pro ball. So I have that experience. I can give them the information and relate to them a little bit. You know, it's hard because it's like, well, we're still trying to get more info, but I think I always tell them, it's like, you want to bet on yourself. You know, if you feel like you're ready to go and you're going to get an opportunity and get, you know, a decent signing bonus, then I want you to go. Like I tell our guys all the time, I want them all to get a chance to play Pro Bowl. You know, now the reality of it is, you look at the numbers, they're not all going to get a chance, but that's what I want, you know, just because I enjoyed it so much. I want them to get that opportunity too. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. You know, I think we'll likely have guys return. But if they get drafted, I'm thrilled, you know, I'm thrilled. At the end of the day, that's why I do it. You know, I do it for them, and I'm hoping they have success and get a chance to play on the next level.
Yep. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
Yeah.
Well, Alex, thanks so much for joining us. Hopefully we'll be able to see you down here in Corpus, like I said, for maybe one of those college tournaments, or maybe just as a fan in the stands, like you said.
Definitely. I'd love to go to, we used to go to Brewster Street all the time, and we would go to a place on the pier, Harrison's Landing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's still there. It had a great, red snapper sandwich, but we'd go to Hester's and Water Street Oyster Bar, all those things. So, one day we'll make it back down there and probably get some Whataburger too. My wife fell in love with Whataburger when we were down there.
Who doesn't, right?
So a lot of, I know. We had never had it before we came. But, a lot of great members from Corpus. I really, really loved our time there.
Thank you, Dan and Alex. So next, I am joined by Amy Johnson. And Amy and I are looking forward to getting connected with an old friend. Amy, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Happy to be here as always. And I'm even more excited to welcome our next guest, Garrett Young. Garrett is the production manager, producer for the Astros, and he's a former coworker of mine. We used to intern together back with the Hooks in 2014. So Garrett, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, we are very excited to have this conversation, just a throwback to old times. So why don't you kick things off and tell us a little bit about your baseball history? Give us the rundown.
Yeah, so it's kind of been a long, winding history to kind of get to the point I'm at right now. I got my first start in 2014 with the Hooks. JD gave me a call while I think it was at a place JD and I loved eating Mexican food in Burleson, Texas. And JD gave me a call and let me know that I got the internship there to be a video on the video production side there in Corpus. And so I'd never been to Corpus Christi in my life and got to come down and really had just the best experience possible my first year working in baseball there in 2014. And then from there, I went to my first full-time job in Southern Maryland. It was a independent team called the Blue Crabs, Southern Maryland Blue Crabs, and they were in the Atlantic League. So I spent a year up there just kind of doing a little bit of everything from the production side, graphic design side, you name it, in minor league baseball and even independent baseball, you wear many different hats. So spent a year up there, and then from there went to Frisco, Texas to work for the Frisco Rough Riders for three seasons, double-A affiliate for the Texas Rangers and rival of the Hooks in the Texas League South Division. So spent 3 years there as our kind of game entertainment manager, really doing focus more on the in-game entertainment there and managing the control room and making sure the fans had a good time at the ballpark. And that led me to my first year with the Astros. So spent the 2019 season with the Astros and am the production manager, producer there. So really the main focus with the Astros is producing each home game. So all the home games and then also spring training, help out for a few of the games down there. And really create the runner show for each game and just make sure it's a great experience for all the Astros fans to come out to the games.
That's awesome. Garrett is he's super modest with everything that he's been able to do and accomplish. And I want to jump in here because when we were talking, we kind of looked at our list of guests this week and we said we wanted to get Garrett on. And originally it was like, hey, Amy, can you do that interview? And then I was like, wait a second. I want to be on here too. Like, this is, I'm not going to let her have all the fun talking to Garrett and catching up. And so, Garrett, I wanted to ask you, what's your favorite Whataburger Field or Hooks memory? What do you remember about that 2014 season? What really stands out to you?
Man, that's so many things, JD. It's really, that's what, triggered my love for the in-game production side. Before this, I had never, you grow up with a love of the game for baseball, and the love was definitely there. But growing up, I never truly appreciated what went behind the scenes. And that season in 2014 is kind of what made me fall in love with what I do now and just the hard work and the dedication that goes behind it. And so that leads to lots of just great memories with y'all and behind the scenes. The one memory that stands out is just the late nights that, you and Amy and Gil and lots of other folks, Chris Blake, and we just the late nights after the games, just goofing around, just really the camaraderie we kind of built up. And, you know, our Dirk Nowitzki little soundbite that we would play at the end of games.
Shut it down.
Yep. So, you know, it's just those little things that really just that stand out to me. You know, there's the story of me dancing and some of our videos attempting to dance. You know, there's the good story about the radar gun, which I'm still afraid to touch a radar gun since that day. I had a bad experience with the radar gun there and may have accidentally lost a few pieces to it and felt terrible. But there is just a whole lot of camaraderie is the biggest memory I have from Waterbury Field and just falling in love with the production side.
That's awesome. Sticking with minor league baseball, you've made the jump to the big leagues now. You're in the show, but before we talk too much about what that experience is like, I want to know, is what's the thing that you miss about minor league baseball that you can't do at the big league level? Or what is it about that's just special about minor league baseball?
Yeah, the minor league baseball, I mean, that's truly where I fell in love with the game of baseball even more, and the fans. You know, it is a smaller setting, so that I'd say that's the biggest difference between minor league and major league is just a smaller setting. So you have a little more one-on-one interactions with your coworkers and really get to know them. Not to say that doesn't happen on the major league level. It's just a more intimate kind of setting, and you really get to know your season ticket holders really well, and your diehard fans. You really just get to just make big impacts on people close to you. And on the major league side, it definitely still happens. It's just more on a bigger scale. And so sometimes you don't get to see those impacts, you know, when a fan may come to the ballpark one time compared to someone that goes to pretty much every minor league game. So I'd say that's the biggest difference that minor league definitely has with its fans. And it's great to kind of see what minor league teams do on the creative side. Sometimes that translates to the major league side as well with theme nights and things like that. So it's minor leagues definitely do have an impact on what we do at the major league level as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great point. Great time too for us to segue over to Minute Maid Park. You know, we spent many hours together in the control room at Waterburger Field, but your control room at Minute Maid Park, what's it like working up there?
Yeah, so we had a big off-season renovation. We actually moved to kind of more right center field by the new Coke deck right next to the video board El Grande. So we're to the left of the main video board. So I guess I'll start with my first season in the old control room. Obviously, it was quite the experience just coming in my first year. And, you know, the person there before me, Rob Runnels, did a terrific job of just leaving a lot of groundwork for me to kind of just pick up and catch up really quick. And so he was tremendous help in just everything he laid out in previous seasons. So that was a smooth transition. And then just obviously getting to know your crew. They come from all different walks of life, from young to old, to little experience, to 20 years experience. So just learning how to manage your staff, and then really just kind of learning the ins and out of the show and just making tweaks here and there. And so the first year was really focused on all that and really understanding just the different connections around the ballpark. Well, fast forward to right after the World Series, we moved from that room. So it's kind of starting, I wouldn't say from scratch, but really starting over again with a new control room and some new pieces in there that we're excited to show off this season. And the new space is awesome. We had the chance to test it out during our college classic. So we got to do a little bit of a full run of show in the new space before the shutdown happened. And so we're grateful to at least have that out of the way before, you know, we get back to baseball and start operating in the new room.
Cool. Really cool. Yeah. I was lucky enough. Me and Garrett had a phone call meeting the other day on our team's app, and he showed me around the room. So it was really neat getting to see it up there. So it'll be fun when we finally get to see that in action. I know one of the coolest parts, I think, about your job that's most fascinating for me was you're on a headset during the game and you're all the way up there in the control room, but you're on like, I don't even know how many different channels. And can you talk about that, coordinating between the production and the promo team, mascot, and, you know, the train and everything? Can you just tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, yeah. So that's one of my favorite parts. We have ballpark tours come through and kind of give behind the scenes look at to a lot of fans that, you know, want to see how we operate up there. And so really one of my favorite parts to tell them is I have two phones. I have a headset on and then I have an Orbit channel on. And so really I am connected to pretty much everyone in the ballpark at one point in time. So really the way we kind of set the tone and set up the production for the day is we always do a production meeting. Pretty much every team, minor league or major league, does something like this with their staff. So we always have our production meeting, and Orbit, our mascot, and then the handlers, and then the promo team, as well as our production team, all join in on this meeting. Bobby Dynamite's in on this meeting, PA announcers, DJ. So anyone who has a hand in what we're doing that night will be in that meeting, and we basically run through the top of the show all the way through post game, and really just go through each element. Obviously in baseball, quite a few things repeat themselves night after night with so many home games. So we do try and mix it up each show. So that's where we'll kind of dive into more details on new elements or new first pitches or new ceremonies. And so that's where the little nuances come. And then really it's a chance for our crew to ask any questions or if they have any ideas. I know Bobby Dynamite and I bounced some ideas off each other and, you know, got to do some fun things with him this past season. Superhero Day was an example of an idea he pitched to me in one of our production meetings and made it happen, and fans loved it. So really that's where all the communication comes through. And then once we get into game mode, it's really, I have my certain channels that I'll talk to. I can do an all call, or I can just focus in with our technical director, who's usually who I'm talking to the most throughout the game. And then Orbit is a fun thing. So Orbit and I are in constant communication and seeing what shenanigans he has around the ballpark. And so that's always fun to stay in touch with him. It's just one big happy family to kind of make it all happen.
That's a lot of fun. Garrett, I want to kind of take a step back with that too a little bit, because I think us, you know, ballpark entertainment nerds, we kind of know what goes into it. But I just want to hit on a little bit of how much of what you do is scripted and planned, and kind of what that really looks like. You know, I think when people come to the ballpark, the magic of what you're able to do and what Amy's able to do at Whataburger Field is that you want everything to feel like it just happened and that there wasn't kind of this big machine behind it that made it. And there are moments where there's a little bit of both and you get a little lucky and things like that, but you're really trying to plan out as much of that entertainment and the game from the fan perspective as you can. Is that right?
Yep. So we really do try to plan out as much as possible before a game, but as y'all know, baseball is unpredictable. There's always something new. And that was kind of the running joke for me last season with our crew is, you know, things that have probably never happened in the past happened within 1 year last year. The running joke was that, you know, oh, that's a new one. So really, we do try to plan out as much as we can beforehand with our promotions and Orbit shenanigans. And the beauty of what Orbit does is sometimes we don't know if the players will interact with some of his shenanigans. It's always great to see when the players play along with, you know, things we're trying to do with that. And then as far as in-game goes, really, we prepare for every scenario, but there's times where it may happen once a year or it may happen 50 times a year. So really just having a plan in place for kind of each element. A couple examples of things that just went off script last year. Yordan during BP hit the video board. I mean, it was amazing. I missed the swing of the bat, but I got a text that said, "Hey, Garrett, have you seen El Grande?" I was like, "No, what's going on?" And they said, "Oh, go look." And so I saw, you know, we call them mods on the big video board screen. We're out in the bottom right corner. And I was like, "Oh, man, now, you know, got to call, make sure it gets fixed." And then they followed up that text with, "Yordan did that." And I was like, "What?" And sure enough, news broke pretty quit. Yeah, he hit the video board during BP. And so that's an example of something that didn't really plan for. And so we kind of executed real within 5 minutes and put up a fun little graphic, and that caught on. So that's kind of examples of stuff you don't really plan for, but it's fun and really keeps us energized when we get to do things like that.
It's a lot of building in as much plan as possible and then giving your team the ability to react, hopefully. And you're lucky, and we're lucky down here, that we work with a bunch of pros that are really good at reacting to those situations and just kind of coming up with what's the right answer in a situation like that. And we do all we can to kind of give everybody the tools to do that. So the number one asked question to anyone that works in baseball, all of us get this probably 50 times a year, is what do you do in the off season? If your job is producing the games, Garrett, what is it that you do once the season ends until they start back up on opening day?
That's my wife's favorite day, is after the season is done. So for good reason. She definitely is a trooper throughout the many years I've kind of worked in baseball, and really have only missed, I think, 2 games. And so been there for pretty much every home game and the late nights that are involved with that. So definitely a lot of downtime in the off season and taking a few vacations and things like that. But really what happens on both the minor league side and major league side is we already start planning for next year. Even during the season, we're planning for next year. So a lot of people don't understand that's kind of the time for us to really start developing our theme nights, our promo items, to what new in-game features we want to do, just really what went well last season, what didn't, and things we can tweak. So it's a lot of just meetings and just game planning for the next year, because as soon as January hits, it's full speed ahead for major league and minor league side. On the major league side, it comes at you a little faster because spring training is right around the corner. And so that moves a little faster than on the minor league side. But really, it's my favorite thing in the off season is obviously getting to spend some really quality time with my family and my wife and going on a few vacations here and there.
Yeah, absolutely. I know off seasons every year are a little different for all of us, but getting to be with family and friends is definitely a highlight. So I want to wrap this up with one exciting question. So you obviously had a lot of highs last year, your first opening day in Major League, coordinating the Hall of Fame for the Astros. What about your World Series experience? Can you just tell us about that?
Yeah, that was, as you mentioned, everything that happened last year goes along with the joke of, well, that was a first. So for me, it was a lot of firsts last year. And so the chance and opportunity to work a World Series was more than I could ever ask for. The chance to do it my first year is, I'm still truly, truly thankful. The outcome wasn't what we wanted, but I'm extremely grateful to have that opportunity. So it really, through the rounds, the ALDS and then the ALCS, it was a chance for me to kind of get my postseason feet wet, so to say. And so I build that experience, especially against the Yankees. That series was pretty intense, and it was a chance to really just get my thoughts straight and what worked well, what didn't. And so that really helped going into the World Series and us being able to execute on some of our hype videos to in full stadium hype rallies. It was really cool to be in on some of the production meetings with Fox and names you hear and see on TV. And it's like, wow, I'm a part of this now. And really cool to, I'll never forget the first time we came live for TV and we're hyping up the crowd and the Fox producers right up there next to us with timing and things like that. When you hear the Fox people say, like, that was awesome. It's just the little things like that that just make it all worth it. And it's a lot of hard work, sleepless nights that go into it. But it was a really, really cool experience as the rounds went on, and a chance to go up to Nationals Park there for Game 3 was cool to be there to witness the Astros win that game and be a part of the crowd that night. And obviously at Game 7, anything can happen. And so we were prepared either way. And, you know, no matter what, it was still just amazing experience to be a part of.
I'm sure those are stories you're going to be telling for a long, long time too. Really cool.
Garrett, thanks for joining us today. We loved getting to catch up with you and see how you're doing up in Houston. And it was fun to get the whole gang back together and have some fun. And hopefully we'll come catch a game up there and have you down in Corpus soon.
Yeah, thank you for having me on and getting to catch up with y'all. I miss y'all. And I absolutely, like I said, loved my time in Corpus, and it's really helped me get to where I'm at today because of your leadership, JD, and Amy, just our friendship over the years and bouncing ideas off of each other. It's just, it's great to have friends like y'all. So glad to be on.
That wraps up today's episode. Thank you to all of our guests for joining us, Meredith Darden and Claudia Huerta from Visit Corpus Christi, former Hook Alex Sogard, and from the Astros Ballpark Entertainment team, Garrett Young. Please subscribe to the show so you'll be one of the first to receive the new episodes when they're available. For Amy Johnson, Dan Reiner, Michael Coffin, and everyone at 734 Eastport Avenue, this is JD Davis signing off and wishing you a safe and healthy week. Thanks for listening to the Hooks Baseball Podcast.